You are now listening to the On Cue Performance Therapy Podcast, where the worlds of sports medicine and performance collide. My name is Mike Quintons. I'm a physical therapist with an entrepreneurial mindset that specializes in treating orthopedic and sports injuries. I'm bringing on the brightest and sharpest in the field of sports medicine to share their best practices and explore the gap where medicine meets performance. What's up, Performance Therapy Nation? This is Mike Quintons, your host of the On Cue Performance Therapy Podcast. Today, we are joined by George Zirkle, the Director of Pitching and Associate Director of Operations at On Deck. As usual, for Season 4, I'm joined by none other than Rob Rubina, Director of Strength and Conditioning at Ivy Rehab in Newtown Square, and we are excited to dive into two segments focused on George's assessment and programming, as well as fall ball baseball, weighted baseball training, and more. Now let's get into the bio. George is the Director of Pitching and Associate Director of Operations at On Deck. George was Director of Pitching at Ascent Athlete for nearly 4 years, where he coached hundreds of pitchers, including MLB, international baseball players, collegiate baseball players, as well as high school and youth pitchers. He also created an internship program in which aspiring coaches received educational training and gained hands-on experience working with athletes. George has spent years coordinating throwing programs with strength conditioning coaches and physical therapists to ensure his pitchers are getting the best care possible. In 2022, George completed his Master's of Arts in Motor Learning and Control from Columbia University. And in 2017, he completed his Bachelor of Arts in Economics from Susquehanna University. George played collegiately at Susquehanna University. All right, let's dive into this. Thanks for joining us, George.
Yeah, like, thanks for having me.
This is sick. We got Rob Rubina here as well, like I said earlier.
What's up, everybody?
Rob's going to have a lot to say today. I feel like you've been a little reserved the last couple.
A little bit. I don't want to steal thunder.
Listen, it's not easy to do, but all right, let's get into this. So pitcher thrower safety, right? That's what I want to dive into first. You mentioned earlier off the camera that rehab is in your wheelhouse or headed that way, I think is the word you use.
Yeah, so. I mean, so, you know, I guess over the years between myself, Rob, and the PTs we've collaborated with, we've rehabbed a lot of pitchers. Right. You know, whether that's your high school guys, college guys, pro guys, from TJs to labrums to flexors to rotator cuffs to whatever ailments the pitchers present with, we've worked together on a lot of them and had some pretty good success. So it's been something that, like, started pretty organically and now is like growing to somewhere where I'm like, yeah, like if you're rehabbing a surgery, you know, if you're a post-op thrower, you should probably train with someone who has experience working with post-op throwers. And there aren't that many people that do it because most of the time there's, you know, you see your surgeon, you see your PT, you get your follow-ups done. At 4 months, usually from a labrum or a TJ, you get cleared to start throwing, and you look at the sheet of paper that's been the same sheet of paper for the last 20 years for the most part, and then you do your throwing program. And there's lots of reasons why those programs need to be changed and improved, but a lot of people don't do it.
So this is gold. Can you share with the listeners what client population you work with? Who are you working with on a day-to-day basis? And give me the range.
Baseball pitchers, anywhere from big leaguers down to 10-year-olds.
All right. And pitchers only?
Pitchers and position guys.
What percentage of the position guys that you work with have sustained an injury within the last couple of years?
So at this point, right now with where I'm at, if a position guy's seeing me, it's usually because they're coming off of an injury.
So let's get into the throwing program, just so our listeners have an idea of, like, who is George working with, right? So tell me about the protocol. What from the protocol should be revised, in your opinion?
The primary limitation with the current return to throw protocols is going to be the marker for intensity, or how people measure that, right? So how most of these programs are written, and there's some variations between HSS and Rothman and some of the other surgeons that give programs to their post-op patients. But for the most part, it starts 25 throws at 45 feet. Rest 5 to 10 minutes, 25 throws at 45 feet.
Yep.
And then week 2 will be just add another set of 25 throws at 45 feet, right? And then what they do to increase intensity is they just back up the distance. But that's not a good measure of intensity in throwing.
Correct.
When, you know, for competition distance for a pitcher, you throw the ball 60 feet. Well, you're hitting 60 feet in week two or week three of your return to throw program. So, but you're not throwing at game speed. So, you know, really like the feedback mechanism that's better is just radar feedback, right? We have radar guns and they're cheap and they're accessible. So like you should use that pretty regularly when you're rehabbing a thrower.
That way you can measure intensity.
Right. And the other thing that I'll use with all of my rehab guys is it's called a pulse sensor. So it's a sensor that goes on the forearm, and basically what it tells you arm speed, elbow torque, measure your throw count, and get your arm angle.
Now, are there absolute values on these, or are they relative values? Like an absolute meaning, like anything over this amount, way too much. Obviously, there's off the charts, but is it all comparative to get a baseline?
It's mostly comparative. You will start to see arm speeds, usually north of like 1,000 RPMs. That's going to be close to game speed. So how that's really helpful is when guys, as they progress in their program, they have stay within 400 to 600 arm speed today. This is a light day for you. So you give athletes, and that's where it's become even more useful, is on like your lighter days or your lower intensity days, having a measurable range to stay in when you're throwing the ball, you know, 55 to 65 miles an hour.
Interesting. Because then that is your, like we would in strength conditioning, right? Or in PT, right? We want to measure the intensity. That way we can get the intended results, right? Whether it's a deload day or a high volume day or whatever it is, a heavy day and not heavy day. Right. So you're doing essentially the same thing using metrics like arm speed, which is fascinating. Sleeves, what do you use? Is it just like a transducer? It's like a sticky thing that they just throw on there, right? Essentially that measures?
Yeah, it's a band that'll go, it'll wrap around the arm. It's
we can always put
like an accelerometer and a gyroscope. Something that like is a little bit beyond what I actually know about biomechanics, but I just know enough to like be dangerous.
Yeah.
I know enough to apply it. I couldn't tell you too much more about
it. I'm not teaching it, right? We'll put that in the show notes. So like even the brand, if you want to offer that,
yeah,
you know, whatever. But that way, you know, people can look it up. That's interesting. So,
I'll back up with programming, right? Because like how you're going to change a program, you know, there's three pillars for me: volume, intensity, frequency, right? And you could add duration as well, but really volume, intensity, frequency. So the issue with the typical return to throw program is the volume fluctuates usually between 50 and 75 throws. You know, it just goes 50 one week, 75, then 50, 75, right. 50, 75, 50, 75, 100, 120, you know. So the volume is, I would say, like, it's okay, but the intensity is where we really, like, there's really a deficit. Because, again, you could be throwing 45 feet and you could be throwing pretty hard. You could be throwing 120 feet or 150 feet and just getting the ball there, you're not throwing very hard.
It's like pitchers' perceived intensities. If you tell them like, hey, I want 60%, like how hard do you think they're throwing when you give them a percentage?
Of their like max output?
Yeah.
They're 60% is probably closer to 80 to 85%.
Right. So even if you give them a percentage to stay at or like an RPE range, that's still like not a good gauge of intensity.
For sure.
Right.
And some of the newer programs, some of the newer programs are giving RPE or they're giving at least some effort band, but it's like one of the ones I saw, it was 50, 75, and 100. I'm like 100% effort at like 12 weeks post-op or 16 weeks post-op for 75 throws or 50 throws. That's nuts.
I agree. We're going to have to get Reinhold Andrews, Dr. Andrews, and Kevin Wilk on this. I mean, that's one I've gone off of. I've followed those guys closely through the years. My issue is the feedback, the communication. Who's watching you do this? How are you measuring the intensity? Are you watching their face at the very least? That would be my tool. You actually have objective numbers, right? Yeah. But like, are they grimacing a little bit? Do the mechanics seem a little off? Right. Is it a sloppy follow through, right? Like some of those things I would pay attention to. But obviously, you're much more in the weeds in it than I am. I want a gentle pivot. I want our listeners to understand what you do. Like I've sent you throwers, you know, like what is your assessment? What do you walk your first day athlete through and your first assessment?
Yeah. So first things first, like I want to get to know the person, right? Like I want to work with someone or coach someone who I don't know. So understanding their background, you know, if they've trained before, what they've done for training, any sort of injuries they've had in the past, and just like their goals and what they want to get out of working with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's sort of your background information that you're going to grab. Then I'm going to go and, you know, I want to see what their range of motion looks like. Right. So that's where I have PTs or strength and conditioning, you know, experts that I can send my guys to. So you want to see what upper body and lower body range of motion look like. You'll see exercise technique, some FMS stuff that Rob will test, and then just general like power and speed and those sorts of stuff, right? So that's your general physical stuff. And then next on the throwing side, you know, I'll run guys through a J-band routine, see how they can respond to instruction if that's a little novel to them, seeing if they can pelvic tilt during J-band, you know, and do some scapular exercises, right? Seeing how their scaps move. Those sorts of things. And then really the rest of it is watching them throw, have them go through different throwing exercises and different starting positions and with different slightly modifying the task to get an idea of how they move from there, getting them on a mound, right? If it's a healthy client, get them on a mound, have them throw a bullpen, preferably at max speed, get pitch metrics with that, right?
What kind of, sorry to interrupt, what metrics are you looking at?
If we're doing a pen on Rapsodo, we're going to look at first the velocity, okay? What's the velocity of your fastball, your slider, your changeup? Next, we're going to look at spin rate, spin direction, vertical and horizontal break. So just the qualities that make the ball move a certain way,
yeah,
that make it potentially a really good pitch or a pitch that needs work.
Yeah, and it's baseline data, right? Like it's, yeah. What are the norms for this individual based on these pitches, right? Slider, curveball, fastball, changeup, whatever.
Correct.
Okay. Interesting. So you do your physical assessment, and what I really like, maybe this is common sense, I don't think to PTs it is, you're looking at lower extremity too.
Yeah.
It's not like we're just looking at core and upper body. You're looking at lower. If there's an ankle injury, that could impact, you know, a lot up the chain, right? So,
right.
So you're looking at the whole thing, which is beautiful. I love that you do that. And then they're throwing, you're watching them throw. You mentioned J-band stuff too, which you're probably, I would imagine more often than not, you're probably putting out some fires too. Like, no, dude, that's not how we do it here. You're going to do it this way.
Yeah. teaching athletes how to do J-bands is like a,
yeah, I'm sure.
A side job.
I can't even, right.
It's just usually a train wreck.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, you're going to do it this way from now on. Yeah. And then they're throwing volume of throws. You're looking for like, hey, I need a minimum of like 5 fastballs or like, I just want to get an idea of how much work they're doing in that time.
For like general throwing stuff, right? So I'll usually have guys throw plyos and have them do a variety of, you know, start positions and tasks, and just so I can see how they move in under different conditions. Then from a bullpen standpoint, yeah, 5 to 7 fastballs is usually right. Sufficient for me to see how the pitch is going to move. I have 5 to 7 of each pitch. And then that's pretty much your... You know, that is the most important data, right? How you're performing on the mound.
Sure.
And that's the stuff that people want the results on.
Sure. You
know, no one cares if their hip IR improves 20 degrees.
Right.
Sorry, Rob.
I know. But then how do you explain all that information to the client? Like, do you rely on a lot of video, verbal instruction?
Yeah. So as I'm going through an assessment, I'm going to video guys and grab a lot of video. And then... when you combine that with looking at the range of motion and some exercise technique or just general body command, it helps you paint the whole picture of this is where you're at because of these presentations and these qualities. And, you know, over the years, like kind of know, all right, if this is happening, you know, with the back hip or front hip or shoulder IR, whatever it is, right, whatever that he's going to see in his assessment, I now like I have that filter of like, sure. All right, this is what I'm kind of looking for. This athlete has no shoulder internal rotation, or, you know, they can't pelvic tilt, yeah. Et cetera.
Yeah. Do the deficiencies or impairments found during the screening or the assessment, do they match the functional performance? Right.
And sometimes they do. And sometimes they don't.
Right.
I mean, we've had, and those yeah. are always like the fun ones or the yeah. trickier ones, because it's like your range of motion's bad, but your throwing looks good.
Yeah. But yeah, hopefully that's the case more so than the opposite.
Usually it's not. Yeah. I wish it was. Well,
listen, that's why you have a job and you're as successful as you are. I mean, the pro guys that we've had trained in here go down the street to see you, or they're coming from you yeah. and coming here. So, you know, your success speaks for itself. So programming, if you're good on the assessment part, if there's anything else you want to add on.
No, I mean, I think like the thrower's evaluation that you put, you know, pitchers through is very detail oriented.
Yeah.
Right. Which I think it has to be, because each thrower, you could probably speak to this, George, like each thrower probably might not look and throw the same, but they all might, you know, throw 85 miles an hour. So like each pitcher is going to move differently on the mound. Having said that, I'm sure there's like a biomechanical model that you follow, you know, that each pitcher needs to hit these markers, but they all might get there differently. So, you know, I feel like, how do you use a model to follow, but each pitcher is going to throw a ball, quote unquote, differently. Or have different mechanics.
It's like a golf swing in some ways. Like they're not all the same, but especially on the PGA, but they can all perform. So so what are the metrics that you're looking for? I guess
it's one of those things where with biomechanical models for pitching, you don't want to fit the athlete to the model. You fit the model to the athlete, right? So you're using the model to say, okay, this is roughly the athlete should look like this. When we're presenting it, though, these are the deviations, and this is how we're going to, then the deviation exists because of these presentations in your range of motion, or just how you were taught to throw at age 7. And now we need to make adjustments.
I love it. Is there anything that you feel like are hard metrics on the assessments that are like, all right, we need ER has to be at least this.
Shoulder ER, you know, at least 100 degrees.
Yeah.
Right. IR, you want, you know, I mean, it depends on what the opposite arm looks like too. Sure. Right. But, you know, you want 20 degrees of IR. You want adequate shoulder flexion. Right. Like the upper body ones are the most important ones for me.
Sure.
Right. You know, the lower body ones, it's just like, how do you move down the mound? If you move well down the mound and your lower body range of motion is okay, cool. If you don't move well down the mound and your lower body range of motion isn't good, that definitely needs to be addressed, because that's going to affect how your upper body gets set up to deliver the baseball.
For sure. And that left, that lead leg in particular. I mean, obviously the rear leg's important, but the lead leg, to my knowledge, like that needs to be, I would call it functionally stiff. Like it's the ER. Like that needs to be able to be, that needs to stiffen up so the rest of the body can, you know, propel around it and you get that rotational force. All right, so let's dive into, if you're good with this, Rob, I'd like to dive in, like, all right, program. So now you got the baseline data, right? You know what this athlete can do. Now what?
Well, what are our goals and what time of the year is it?
Yeah, all right, so let's talk. All right, season just ended. Getting back into it. It's late summer, early, I guess, for like a high school athlete, right? Like late summer, early fall type thing, right?
Well, no, because they got fall ball.
Fall ball.
All right, so baseball players are a little different.
Let's do this. I got it. Let's do a high school athlete, month of November, December time frame. Goals are velocity improvement. I want to throw harder.
Okay. So the high school athlete who comes to me in November has likely just finished fall ball. Usually fall ball wraps up the first, you know, middle to end of October, hopefully not anywhere past like October 30th. Or October 31st, you know, like let's end the season, guys. So, you know, let's say high school fall season wraps mid-October. You know, a lot of guys will take a couple weeks off at that point. Usually I think that's good for physically to let the arm and body calm down from rotating for the last, you know, 45 plus weeks. Also mentally, it can be good to not pick up a ball for a little while.
I've heard this before. If you throw 10 months out of the year, adolescent athletes that throw 10 months out of the year are 10 times more likely to suffer elbow pain or an elbow injury. Is there any like, have you heard this before?
Yeah, I think I know the study you're talking about that has like a bunch of survey data and kind of backtracks to, you got hurt at 16. What were you doing at 8 through 12? And then use survey data, and that's like...
Yeah, it's not the most convincing.
It's not
study, like, agenda,
yes,
right?
Yes. Do athletes that throw the most get injured more? Yeah. Do they get injured more because they're throwing? Maybe. Are there other factors that go into it? Yes. And then the other side of it is these kids that throw 10, 11, 12 months out of the year, they likely want to do it, right? So it's like when you add in the psychological side of like what it means for a lot of these, you know, especially adolescents, to be a baseball player and train as a baseball player, it takes on a bigger thing.
I think that's a great point. I don't think it's unsafe of you to say that you can throw 12 months out of the year and still be okay and still be a Division I athlete. So I'm with you on that. I think proceeding with caution for a few months out of the year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, should you be live pitching 12 months out of the year?
No.
Okay. Right. I want to make sure that I hear you say that. And I'm not trying to get you to advocate for the 10-month thing.
No, and I'm not
just
even
curious what your thoughts are. You see it more than anyone else.
You know, right, when someone comes to me and says, I want to throw harder, and the months I can train to throw harder are when I'm not playing competitive baseball. So I have November, December, January, and February. So I only have 4 months to do that.
Yeah, and that's when the 10-month athlete would say, I'm shutting it down.
Right. So you have one school that's, hey, if you want to shut down for November, December, and pick up a ball January 1, that's cool. I'm okay with that. That gives you plenty of time to get ready for your season. It doesn't give you a lot of time to get better for your season.
That's a great point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Or throw harder.
And if you want to throw harder, you have to throw.
Hard.
We talked about running, right? You want to run faster, you got to sprint.
Right.
can't do squats.
No, throwing as fast as you can is a skill.
For sure. I mean, listen, I'm with you on it. And I've always been an advocate for the 10-month thing, but I want to talk to the expert. That's you. So, and again, we're talking about kids training, right?
Right.
So,
and all these kids are like, if I could have it, if the baseball world wasn't measured in velocity,
right.
we would just take some time off.
Sure.
Hey, don't worry about it. You know, you can grow into your velo. You can just crush weights. And, you know, at 18, you can throw 86 to 90 miles an hour and go to a Power 5 school because you're going to develop into 92 to 95 by the time you're 21. But that doesn't happen now. If you want to go to a Power 5 school, you got to be throwing 88 to 90 as a sophomore in high school.
Okay, this elephant in the room, why fall ball? I got to ask. Like, I played baseball growing up. Didn't really play in high school. Played Little League. Loved baseball. I loved the sport. I didn't play fall ball. I played football. Right.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, these kids are all playing fall ball. And I remember like kids who played fall ball were like really good in the spring. Like they were the real ballers. And maybe they got pre-selected that way, whatever. Why are we pushing fall ball so hard?
I look at it as there's demand for it. So someone had to fill the supply. Kids say, I want to play fall ball. Well, what are you going to do? Turn them away?
Yeah, no, I played football. I played a bunch of different sports, but like 4 months before the season, like I'm getting ready for that season.
Yeah.
Right. Like unless they were back to back, but like football, like that training started like May, April, yeah. Right. Whenever baseball was done or what have you, at least for me. So taking off and make what you're saying makes sense. Taking off November, December, and January, and you're not going to be a better ball player that spring compared to last spring if you take those months off. Right, so the demand and supply thing, it's an interesting way of putting it, but I understand.
It's tricky because, you know, also in the baseball world and athletics in the world in general, there's a lot of social comparison that goes on.
Sure.
And if this top junior in high school played in this fall tournament, then I should too. And, you know, if I'm not playing, I'm not getting better or whatever. You know, fall ball, I've gone back and I'll put it this way. That's something I have, like, you know, I used to not advocate for it as much. I used to say, hey, you should just train and lift and take time off. You know, your competitive season is from March to August, and that's plenty for a 16-year-old. But at the same time, people want to do it. So,
And schools are probably paying attention to it. Let's be honest.
And kids get recruited in the fall. And a lot of time, on the flip side, a lot of times fall ball exists for guys to develop and for guys that maybe didn't get the reps that they expected to get in the spring to fill in those gaps.
Sure.
Or you were hurt in your high school season, and now, you know, you only have, you threw 3 innings in high school, you threw 30 in the fall. Well, now you've only thrown 33 innings. You kind of need fall ball. You need to get another 20 in there just to, from a season long workload standpoint.
Sure.
You know, that's a normal range to be in as a high school athlete. Fall ball is very, like, the other side of it is it's very like individual specific, but the information that you need to make the decision of whether or not you should play fall ball, you don't really have until July or August, and rosters are set, teams are set, and money's in at that point. So you're playing.
Right. Interesting. Now this is, it all makes perfect sense. I don't have any objections to it. I don't have any beef with it. It never played fall ball. So I kind of wanted, it's an opportunity to learn more about it. All right. So programming, So can you dive a little bit more into, and I know I interrupted, we went on the fall ball rabbit hole, but tell me more about the programming. How many days a week, you know, for
velocity,
that? For
yeah. the, high school athlete, athlete velocity.
High school athlete season. Velo. Okay. So high school athlete comes to me in November 1, and yeah, October 15th, he wrapped up fall ball. He didn't pick up a ball for 2 weeks. November 1, the assessment would change in that sense, right? We're still doing everything on the strength and conditioning side, but on the throwing side, we're not going to have the kid throw a bullpen at max effort, right? Right. You haven't thrown max effort in 2 weeks, and you just had a, you know, call it a 7-month season, 8-month season. So let's dial it back. So I would say, like, they would just go through a throwing assessment and not a pitching assessment.
Sure.
Right? Which gives you enough to write a program.
Right.
So from there, you know, you're working in November, you're working backwards from March 1, right? March 1st is when high school baseball starts. So you're just backdating those 4 months to create the plan for the athlete. So, you know, generally speaking, November will be mostly a buildup. November into like the beginning of December will be a buildup. During that buildup, athletes will go from throwing, you know, 3 days a week to usually 4 days a week at that point when their intensity is pretty high. And then, you know, during when they're fully on ramped, say at the 5 to 6 week mark, they're going to start doing some pull downs. So those are, you know, get a jog, shuffle, and throw the ball as hard as you can. And that, to me, is probably the best way to build velocity because you're running and throwing the ball as fast as you can. So if we're trying to build the raw skill or the raw tool, that's the best way to do it because that's the best way you're going to get output. And then you could add overload, underload training to that as well. That I usually like to save for either really high training age, like older high school guys, or college and pro guys. Really, in high school, I don't think that athletes need overload, underload training because the training itself is enough of a novel stimulus to elicit an adaptation. As athletes get older and it's off season number 7 for you and you're 24 years old, yeah, now we need to change things in order to get the adaptation we want. So that's when I think, you know, really there's a good window to introduce throwing a 6-ounce, 7-ounce, 4-ounce, 3-ounce, 2-ounce ball as hard as you can to get essentially the same training effect.
And that wouldn't be as useful for a 15, 14, 15, 16 year old to throw some of those med balls.
Weighted baseballs. Yep.
Weighted baseballs.
I see that as higher risk.
Not worth the output. Not worth the result. The potential result of increased velo. There's other ways to get the velo, right?
The worst thing that could happen to a high school kid is getting hurt. You know, like that's
period.
Right. Like if you're an aspiring athlete, getting hurt in high school is not good.
Especially baseball. It's a spring sport, right? So you're short 1 year relative to everybody else.
Right.
In my opinion.
Right.
I would think, but recruiting. So you can't lose a year, right? Your junior year is amazingly important. Your freshman, sophomore year is super important.
All right. That's a wrap for episode 1 with George Zirkle, the director of pitching and associate director of operations at On Deck Training Facility. In the next episode, we're going to dive into weighted baseball training, rehab protocols, and even a little bit more fall ball.
Thanks for listening to the On Cue Performance Therapy Podcast. If you'd like this episode, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It would mean so much to me if you could leave us a 5-star review so more listeners like you could get this important information. See you next time.